Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is November 13th, 2014, almost done with this year. This is truly amazing. Many announcements to make tonight. Some updates on the Rosetta mission, which its probe landed on a comet nucleus this past week, a historical event. But, interestingly enough, I'll be talking about that anyway, some interesting twists there. Also, belatedly, NASA released scientific data, I guess you'd call it scientific data, regarding sighting Spring, the comet that passed by Mars a couple weeks ago. And actually, what they're admitting is that a whole lot happened. I found some traces of information in some remote articles, and one of the things that's very interesting was that there was a rise in electron count, which is explained clearly by my plasma discharge comet model. As the comet discharges the solar capacitor, the bulk current carrier, the bulk charge carrier in the electrical current, is electrons. And there's a very good reason for that. This is all explained in my books. All of my books talk about this phenomenon. And in my very earliest papers, which are in the appendices of the books. But basically, an electron has a unit charge. It's the same as a proton, the same as many ionized particles, is the same charge as many dust particles, for example, or molecules, etc. But the electron is the smallest or lowest mass. I shouldn't say smallest, that's kind of deceptive. But it is the lowest mass object, and compared to the next less massive object in this plasma, which is surrounding the comet, are the protons. And there's a difference of nearly 2,000 in the mass. So when the forces, the electrical forces, begin to work on the particles that move in the current flow, the electrons move the farthest, the fastest, thusly making up the bulk of the electrical current. And so one expects the bulk charge carrier and the bulk of the effects to be occurring due to electron movement. So it is of no surprise that Mars and the atmosphere and the spacecraft, the MAVEN spacecraft that are orbiting Mars, experienced a large increase in electron density in the plasmas they were measuring. So, and as I said, something very subtle in the mentioning of this, and of course they put this out, of course, not knowing what the cause is or how it's related to the fact that comets are not dirty snowballs. So anyway, I'll be talking a little bit more about that. Just a quick announcement. There's been a plethora, a outrush, if you want to call it that, of crazy Planet X stories lately. Some of them take on the similar tone of the, in the past, dual sun pictures, people with photographs, these are internal reflection within a camera, but it makes it look like there's dual sun, and none of this has any validity at all. So just be expectant of that. If you see emails or people passing this around, it's just simply more government plan disinformation trying to make Planet X a goofy story. Some of the old hacks from the old Planet X government misinformation programs are out there, come out of their little mole holes to pass off misinformation. So just expect to see that. What is the real story of Planet X? Well, in summary, there are many thousands of Planet X type objects. NASA has admitted that they've measured thousands of objects out there. In fact, they estimate that there are more planets outside of our solar system than are in solar systems in the galaxy. And these are rogue planets. They're moving around. They don't know where they come from. They don't know where they're going. But they will tell you that there's no such thing as Planet X that could come into our solar system and cause havoc. But the end result is that there are many, many, and not all of them are going to cause massive destruction. And, of course, well, anyway, it's not worth mentioning, wasting time on this show. But just be aware that there's a lot of Planet X misinformation floating around out there. Usually they wait till springtime. But it seems for some reason the nutcases are coming out of the woodwork right now. A listener asked me to describe the conditions for what's known as the perfect storm. Actually, I've done this quite a few times on past radio shows. But the movie that was made, The Perfect Storm, talks about a hurricane in the North Atlantic. And really what happened, it was a combination of three storm systems. One of them was a hurricane that came out of the Atlantic, swept up the eastern seaboard, and moved into the North Atlantic. The second storm, and these three storm systems combined to form one massive storm system in the North Atlantic. And, of course, standard science would try and tell you that the hurricanes are formed by warm water. Well, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration people, there's no warm water in the North Atlantic in November. So at any rate, not sure what they're smoking over there, but they're getting the government paychecks. That's the bottom line there. But okay, to go back to the perfect storm, there were three storm systems. One was the hurricane coming up the eastern seaboard, typical hurricane pattern, not exactly for late October, but that was the first storm. The second storm came through the southern states, moved across Appalachia, dumped a tremendous amount of snow in the Appalachian Mountains, and quite a few people died, hikers, people living there, people that just were not expecting this on a nice late October morning, which typically down there is very nice. But anyway, the that second storm moved across to Appalachia, across the northeastern states, and out into the North Atlantic. Okay, storm number three was a storm that came across the border states between the United States and Canada. It came in an easterly direction, and this was the famous Halloween blizzard of 1991. Oh, I happened to be there and experienced this firsthand. And, of course, I grew up in Minnesota and shoveled my share of snow for $5 for the little old lady down the street or, you know, whatever. I shoveled more snow than probably most people have ever seen. But at any rate, be that as it may, this storm was the storm to end all storms. It snowed 6 feet in a two-day period, actually about a three-day period. So it was the first cycle of the storm, the cyclonic storm that moved across, dumped 3 feet of snow, and then there was about a day hiatus. And another, about the third day, started to snow again and dumped another 3 feet. And I remember the snow plows. Now, Minnesota is ready for snow. The snow plows are big. I mean, they're big, big machines. These are big road machines. And they have a load in the back of them. They're a giant dump truck, basically, a huge dump truck with a big plow in the front, dual and triple plows on the front. And they have a load of gravel and salt in them. So that makes them weigh probably about 50 tons. And these babies have big motors, and they're capable of moving through almost anything. Well, they couldn't make it. I mean, they were stuck in the snowbank. And so that storm then moved out into the North Atlantic. That's storm number three. And so this is early November 1991, the perfect storm. And so the listener asked, what kind of conditions? I've always said that hurricanes are measured by a single number, like a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 category hurricane. That's simply totally has a very limited description, because there's the size, there's the intensities, there's the amount of water content, not only that the storm is holding, but the amount of water content that it dumps. And in that case, it was in the form of snow. That storm, the overland storms, I call himicanes because they are overland, as kind of a play on words, where the hurricanes are over water. But that's basically it in a nutshell. So that was a listener question. And I wanted to talk about this theme of private space. Now, this is very scary. We have an extremely dangerous situation that is developing in outer space, in outer space research and exploration. This past week, Google, of all outfits, announced an agreement with NASA to lease Moffett Field. Moffett Field is a combination Air Force Navy base, and NASA has a big facility there, and Google is going to lease it for 60 years. This is the buildings. Some of these buildings are enormous. They were built, some of them back in the 30s, for the dirigibles that were part of the military complex at that time. So these are big buildings, big facilities, a 1,000-acre campus, you might call it. Google leasing this from NASA over a period of 60 years for $1 billion+. Now, when an outfit like Google steps in and has $1 billion to throw around just for a place to hang their hat, you have to brace yourself for, because remember, Google is the outfit that knows everything about you, can search in your computer, can program Google search results tailored to you, because they know it's you sitting there. That's one of the biggest misinformation search engines on the planet, tailored to bring misinformation to the public. So it's a very scary issue when Google is able to drop $1 billion to rent a facility for space, their headquarters for space, aerospace research and development and going into outer space. Let me review some of the other things that went on in this past couple weeks. Two private space enterprises had their rocket systems blown up out of midair. One was the orbital rocket that was launching from Virginia. 6 seconds into the launch, Kauai, the rocket, the main rocket stage, blows up. And it blows its content of 5,000 pounds of who knows what all over the countryside. The announcement comes out, don't touch it. If you find something on the ground, call somebody, but don't touch it. So who knows what they had in there. It probably wasn't Tang. So it might have been radioactive Tang. And by the way, some people asked me, they said that the rocket was a nuclear explosion, and no, it was not. It was a chemical rocket. But nobody really quite knows what the content of the payload was that was en route to the International Space Station. So at any rate, that was one of the private enterprise disasters. The second was Virgin Galactic, Richard Branson's brainchild, and the corporation with Burt Rutan out in California, in the Mojave Desert out in California. And apparently they have about 400 high-level engineers working for them. So these small space enterprises are pretty high-level, sophisticated entities. Now, Google is entering this. Okay, so let me add one little carrot to the cake here. Elon Musk, with his SpaceX program, has had contracts to take materials to the International Space Station, and has a space exploration program that's underway and researching in the background, but is in the process of suing the Department of Defense. Now, this is, 10 years ago, it would have been just unheard of. for a private enterprise, small startup private enterprise, to sue the Department of Defense and two major traditional government-sponsored aerospace corporations, Boeing and Lockheed Martin, for price fixing or contract fixing so that the Elon Musk's SpaceX corporation could not get the launch contracts. And so he's suing the Department of Defense and two major aerospace corporations included because of basically contract fixing. Now, you have to imagine in all of this milieu that an outfit like NASA, you know, is the space agency of supposedly the most capable space agency on the planet, which it is not because they couldn't get a mouse into space. And it's very questionable. Some of their claims of accomplishments are very questionable, self-proclaimed claims. But be that as it may, then you have the Department of Defense. You have the Navy, which, unbeknownst to most people, is the largest of the three branches of the military, the Army, Navy, Marines. The Navy is the one that has the biggest aerospace program. A number of years ago, they showed the contract line items for the Navy only for aerospace procurement was $60 billion in 1 year for aerospace hardware equipment procurement, and that was full 3.5 times the annual NASA budget. So you know there's a lot of activity going on in the background. Well, who's controlling this? Who's in charge of this? Because you, the public, certainly aren't getting any benefit from this. All they feed you is the mushrooms that grow on you-know-what and grow in the dark. They're treating you like mushrooms, and you know the only information the public gets is this fluffy, dirty snowball fairy tale science. And you know you have to know that in the background there's some serious space science activity going on when a secret program in the Navy is running 3.5 times the annual NASA budget. And by the way, that NASA budget covers personnel and buildings and upkeep and maintenance and the space shuttle and everything. And the Navy has a single line item in their budget for hardware procurement, which is 3.5 times that, which doesn't include, you know, additional items like personnel and facilities and maintenance and everything else. And you might think, well, why the Navy? Well, in the original fight over who would be the person to go in space, the Navy said, look, we already have personnel on small confined areas and ships, and they would be better suited to do this than the Air Force. But, of course, the Air Force won out, supposedly, but I think in the end the Navy actually won out. So anyway, this kind of sets the scene for Google coming in and leasing a NASA facility. Moffett Field is the location. But who is Google? You know, the things that Google does, their infiltration into your personal life, the control of information, who ultimately on top controls Google? When these pretty boys get rich off of, you know, Facebook, Google, Twitter, whatever else is out there, normally they should be buying yachts in the Caribbean and ranches out west and dating movie stars. But the end result is they're starting to throw money into outer space. And Elon Musk has his founding in the same, you know, with his PayPal, founding PayPal, etc. But Larry Page, one of the founders of Google, you know, they have interest in outer space, and I think that's wonderful. But you have to ask yourself, what kind of connections do you need to make this happen? If Jim McCanney walked up to NASA and says, hey, you know, I got $1 billion to throw, I want to rent your facility, they would look at me like I was crazy, and it wouldn't happen. So all I'm saying is you have to have some serious connections and camaraderie, let's put it that way, with your goals. When I was back in 1982, I was out in California, Los Angeles, dealing with venture capital firms looking for funding for my aerospace projects. I learned something, and that is that these people are very unethical. Let's put it that way. The money and the flow of money is very much linked to the aerospace industry is very much linked to the military. And when I told my financial advisors who were coming up with money for my projects, when I told them I didn't want my propulsion systems being used to deliver nuclear bombs, they looked at me like I was out of my mind. And it didn't take long for me to be distanced from my own projects. And that's a story unto itself. But all I'm saying is you have to be part of the game. You have to be willing to play the game to be part of the game. And I wasn't. I stood on my ethical grounds, and that's why I was moved out of my own project there, basically. But this situation with Google investing $1 billion just for a facility is very scary. Who is on top of these people? It's like some of the private research institutes that are around. Who is overseeing what's going on here? Where are these people going? What government information that's already been procured? For example, let's take an example, asteroid exploration of asteroids for mining. NASA has used your money, public money, public funding, taxation money, in their budget to discover and study asteroids and to determine which ones could have the mother load of, for example, metals, valuable metals, gold, platinum, the whole laundry list of valuable natural resources. And that information can be passed to special groups that have special interests. But once again, that wouldn't be coming my way or your way or anybody else's way. So you see the danger here, having private organizations which then can hire staff and have dual staff, for example, people who work, for NASA, who work for Google, who work, and of course, if they have this kind of money, they can hire talented engineers and staff to operate this their organization. Virgin Galactic, Richard Branson said in an interview that he had over 400 very highly talented aerospace engineers working for his company. That's a fleet of people. That's a big payroll, and that's a lot of talent. And so what else are they doing in the background? Well, I think it's wonderful having private exploration of space, but you, the public, are completely out of the loop on this and where it's going. Remember that the birthright to the stars is a public issue. And it's not just, something that belongs to Google because they got the deep pockets to throw down the $1 billion for Moffett Field today, and tomorrow they can hire, staff it with 200 or 300 top engineers and start building spacecraft or buying technology from Russia or China or whatever they're doing. The whole issue here is where is this going to go in 5, 10 years? And then you see private enterprises that are having their spacecraft blown up on the launch pad or affected, and you can't tell me that those two failed private space enterprises, the Orbital rocket and the Virgin Galactic Space 2 low Earth orbit vehicle, that the disasters with those were somehow accidental. Excuse me, a little bit too much coincidence to be coincidental. So there's some factors going on here. If you see the complexity of this situation, and then where does it leave you, the public? The public is not in the equation. This is a very scary precedent, and it's going to be out of control. There's nobody controlling this, and, of course, these entities, who knows? It's just very bizarre. So I'm going to leave that. I'll talk about that again possibly in future weeks. Just a quick side note, my book, RSA, or the title of the book is Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. It was a couple of releases ago before my latest book, McCanny Wing Generator, World Energy Project. The previous book was called Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. And typically, I go on radio shows and I announce my books and talk about them. This book had an absolutely, I mean, the radio stations that typically take my books and promote them, etc., except for, like, for example, John Moore, of course. I was talked about it on his show, but the major, the big name radio stations, which, you know, I've been a guest for these traditionally over decades, wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And so what did I do? I basically enumerated that there's a giant scam going on in the world of computing, secure computing, that your home computer has basically a firewall and antivirus, all of that, which has so many holes in it. But that's what the government uses to get into your computer and watch what you're doing, to see all your email buddies, to see all of the activities, the websites you're visiting, etc. And all this is cataloged. So if ever your name pops up, someone can go in and do an investigation of everything that you've done. Now, let me just interject here something. There's something called the Argus drone video system that has been just made public. It was developed a long time ago. And so basically this is a extremely high resolution camera system that can watch an area of 15 square miles high resolution video, and it takes that video and stores it. So this is then broadcast to the ground, stored in databases. So if somebody wants to go back last week or last month or last year and see what you are doing, coordinating this with ground cameras, airport cameras, highway cameras, whatever, they can basically, with this aerial high-resolution camera system, determine everybody's movements, and not just yours, but everybody else's also. This data is not just kept for a month or a week. It is kept indefinitely, so it's just an indication of the unbelievable amount of memory that is available to the resources that want to sit there and capture data on everybody. This is very bizarre activity. But it's called the Argus drone video system. If you couple this with the detectors, cameras and microphones that are in your TV set, your water meter that's on the side of your house, and other electronics in the house, they just have a complete view of everybody, your inner thoughts, your conversations with other people, and who knows what else. But when I released this book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, it showed one of the essential aspects of this whole process, and that is how does the public keep their data and lives secure. And what I pointed out is that the ongoing use of public key encryption mechanisms, which depend on prime numbers, is a system that's broken. It doesn't work, never worked, but they don't want to retool. This is the government people who sit there and snoop on everybody, and they want to keep it out of the information stream of the public. They don't want you to know that the antivirus system on your computer is actually a backdoor for the government to use to get in and snoop on everything you do. Okay, I just want to make a couple quick announcements about products. Ordering lately, to say the least, has been heavy on the products on my webpage. These are very unique products, very good prices. The 10% sale on some selected items there is very good. Is still going on there. And at the request of some people who have been saving their pennies, these are some people who it takes some serious effort to save the money to buy these essential products, requested that I leave the sale up to give them time to purchase. So as a result, I left the sale up. It's available, of course, for everybody. But I foresee a day in which I simply will be able to, I'll be sold out of product, the available product that is in our warehouses. So, but as long as it's the order buttons are on the web page, we will have these products in stock and available. Also remember that there's a number of unique items there, like the Universal Chemrad Oil Pre-Filter, which fits any modern gravity water filter system. And it's for emergency, it's an absolute must. It's the only place in the world you're going to find it. Also, items like the Recalendar Sunstar Clock that allows you to rebuild the calendar and the clock using both the stars and the sun. And you can do this from any place on Earth. It's an amazing little device that I invented. And there again, it's the only place on the planet you will find such a device that allows you to use the sun and the stars to rebuild the calendar and clock, even after a pole shift. So, at any rate, but go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and go to the webpage. You'll find the secure web ordering page. There are links to that subpage. And read about all of these items there. Also, the small 1 and 2 liter personal travel emergency filters. Just so many items there that you simply will not find anyplace else. And then just a quick mention, the GF filters, which take out all of the chemicals that are in your water. You don't have to have add-on filters to use these. Just an amazing technology. And once again, not going to find anything like this, and certainly not at the prices available on my webpage. Okay, enough of that. Just one other quick mention, I'm sorry. If people are thinking about ordering things for Christmas or gifts, to have it sent to somebody else or whatever, sent to you, please order soon. Don't wait, because once we get into the month of December, then things get touch and go, because shipping is all clogged up, trying to keep products in stock. So make your orders early, and so that's all I have to say. Just go to the webpage, all the information there, jmccsci.com. That's 7 letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. Okay, on to the Rosetta mission. This past week, the Rosetta spacecraft landed on a comet, a probe that... Now, what they're saying is they believe it bounced a couple times, so it hit the comet nucleus, bounced, and then bounced back. They had a harpoon, which supposedly was shot out, but it didn't grab onto the nucleus. So, hard to say exactly what happened there. But at any rate, the spacecraft, the probe, ended up sitting kittywampus sideways, they say, with 1 foot up in the air. And I can't imagine really having a spacecraft trying to land on an irregular comet nucleus built like a typical lunar lander with legs. I would think you'd have it some kind of a round spherical object that could then reorient itself no matter how it landed. But, they didn't ask me on the design team. But the pictures that were sent back is very clear that what you see there is a hot, dry rock. The nucleus of this comet is just, it's a rock. There's no water, there's no ice, there's no snow, there's no vapor coming off of it. Back in September, they announced from the satellite orbiting this comet that there were jets of dust and gas coming off the nucleus. And they claimed in the article that there was sublimation, in other words, gases going from the liquid or frozen state directly to the gaseous state. But that announcement was basically misinformation, because the Rosetta spacecraft has detectors that are fully capable of seeing the gases and dust, the vapors, and measuring and detecting and determining what their constituency, but they didn't see any. So what is the cause of dust and jets coming off the comet nucleus? Well, I was talking earlier in the show about the electron jets that are coming in the plasma stream coming by the discharge of the plasma, the local plasma, by the comet nucleus. These electron streams tend to pinch. That's a physics word. That means they magnetically pull themselves together, and so they become like an electron beam blasting at the surface of the comet nucleus. But no water, no ice, and so the jets are not an indication of sublimation. They're an indication of the electron beams that are hitting the comet nucleus. They also announced that they heard crackling, some type of electrical crackling noise from within the comet nucleus, which is very interesting. But I wouldn't say that technically it was from within the comet nucleus. I would say that it's probably the electron beam that is colliding with the comet nucleus. Just on a side note here, Jesse Ventura, this past week, we had the Veterans Day, of course, and my dad was a veteran. Many people have relatives, fathers, or they are a veteran themselves, but Jesse Ventura made an interesting statement. He said that our military does not really protect us. And so that's a rather controversial statement, but what he's saying here is that they protect business interests and other, aspects of the garnishment of resources from countries. But of late, they have been used to not for the protection of the American public. One thing you can say, if you agree with that or not, one thing you can say is that the world is a far more dangerous place now than it ever was through at any time in history, because the weapons available today are far more dangerous. They're in the hands of far too many people, and the poor public, they're trying to take the arms away from the people that would be their only defense, the public. By the way, the UN this past week announced a proposition, a treaty it's called, in which they want to disarm the public of the world. And that treaty is supposed to go in effect none other than December 24th, 2014, the night before Christmas. Oddly enough, that's the same day when the Rothschild European Banking Entity, under the guise of the Rockefellers in the United States, the Morgans, the Chases, etc., the night before Christmas 1913 is when they implemented the Federal Reserve in the United States, a branch of the European banks. And the taxation system and other forms of public control that went in at the same time. Let me talk a little bit about comet sighting spring. NASA very belatedly released some information about comet sighting spring at Mars. This is the comet which passed within 82,000 miles of the planet Mars a couple weeks ago. And at the time, as I expected, there was very little information released. Now they are releasing some information, and it's very clear that a tremendous amount of activity occurred at Mars. When this comet went by, they said the atmosphere of Mars extended greatly. It was barraged with heavy metals. There were auroras. There was a coloration of the atmosphere, an orangish color. And isn't that interesting? That was sulfur. And isn't that interesting? When a long time ago, when I was talking about some of the comet issues that could occur, I talked about the red hand of death as being in a comet, the sulfur from a comet tail as seen from the atmosphere. Well, we actually saw that with sighting spring at Mars. We saw the fingers, and actually there were photographs that I saw of this, the finger-like protrusions of sulfur, which were red, and so it makes it appear as a hand up in the upper atmosphere with the fingers dripping down so to speak, into the atmosphere. But the red hand of death, the sulfur, sulfur dioxide that poisoned the land back in Egypt in the days of Moses, taking the Israelites out of Egypt. But the red hand of death, the sulfur, I've talked about this, like I say, in many shows previously. That's one of the effects. They said that the electron count with the MAVEN spacecraft increased. So the electron count in the Martian atmosphere increased. Obviously, as I explained before, in the beginning of the show, a result of the plasma discharge, where the electrons are the primary charge carriers, illuminating the Martian atmosphere. So they had auroras, they had the noctoluminescent lights, which are basically cloud systems, electrical cloud systems up in the atmosphere, an increase in the metals because this came from the comet tail. And it just showed how very little NASA really knows about comets. But in the announcements, all they talked about was Icy Wanderer and this and that, little snowball. They talked about this comet coming from beyond Neptune in the Oort cloud. Well, the Oort cloud is way out there, far, far beyond Neptune. And so I just found a lot of real fairy tale science being included in the articles released regarding sighting spring. But very obviously some very dramatic light show effects going on as this comet went by Mars, clearly unanticipated by anybody at NASA. And clearly also, just as with so many other examples, proving once again that my plasma discharge comet model explains all these phenomena naturally as a byproduct of the theory itself. the end result is that sighting spring interacted electrically with the planet Mars, added material to the Martian atmosphere, which is once again like back in the days of Moses when they had a vast pollution event due to the passage of Comet Venus. Comet Venus, of course, being a big comet and having a much more dramatic effect on Earth, caused mountain ranges to form, etc. Sighting spring, they estimate that the comet nucleus is just a small fraction of a mile across. And so certainly not massive enough to cause physical damage to the planet Mars or its surface, but sufficient electrically, the electrical size much bigger, sufficient electrically to cause pollution event in the atmosphere of Mars, etc. So two very interesting comet stories developing this past week. Okay, so enough review of the comet activity there, but that the information that's dribbled out to the public on that is just, it's expected. They certainly want the public to be dumbed down and stupid, not having any idea what's going on. And the scientists that do this, I really am convinced that most of them fully understand what I do. That they, in the back room where they can't admit it, they understand that they're cornered. They can't come out and say anything else because they would lose their money, their career. They'd lose their pension. They'd lose everything. So they're just waiting to get to retirement. They're just floating along, keeping the bandwagon vertical and not rocking the apple cart, as they say. Okay, so I want to switch gears a little bit. It's important for me to review the progress going on with the WING project, the WING generator project, which is going to be operating in the background for some time to come. And the World Energy Project, I want to mention, too, many people out there have shown interest in licensing, etc., and we're getting back to people as time allows. But just be patient. We'll be talking to you very shortly if you've shown interest in the licensing. And so it's a complicated process, but something that in the long run will be very beneficial to to everybody. I have high hopes for the groups of people that are, small scale. And that was one of my main points, is to keep this in the hands of the individuals, of the small entrepreneurs. Because something like this, typically, let's look at outer space. All of a sudden, Google comes in and drops down $1 billion and, has the ability to hire big staffs of engineers right out of the chute. And if that's what happened with the Wing project, it would get buried and Big Energy would buy it up and scuttle it and it would never see the light of day. So it's very important for private, small entrepreneurs to get this up and going, because that's how it's going to grow. And that's how it's going to keep it in the hands of the public and not be used or absconded with. Okay, so at any rate, the whole issue here, remember there's two main concepts. One is the development of energy using Wing technology. These are the small, medium, large systems, the large systems capable of replacing one-for-one nuclear generators. And the second concept being distributed energy. How to take this energy, distribute it around the country, and facilitate basically an electrical system that has the controllers at the house. Now, one might think, well, gee, that's a lot of money for the houses to have these controllers. But if you understand the level of technology and infrastructure that's already in place, and then you understand that this is a lot less expensive than trying to build nuclear power plants or coal-fired power plants, the end result is a system that will last for decades and decades and provide you with energy that does not come from high energy content fuels. This coal, nuclear, oil, propane, natural gas, etc. A lot of rural electrical production companies are going to propane or natural gas, I should say, for energy production, for electricity. And that will compete with home heating and drive up those prices, and then eventually might come to the point where you don't have any option but severely expensive heating systems. And so in that, of course, people are locked in, they have the technology installed in their houses, etc. I talked last week about heat pumps, something that they're used in the southern states because with a relatively warm temperatures, you can derive heat from any ambient air source or underground source and heat a house or cool it in the summer, heat it in the wintertime. But the whole point is that there is a system that now that's in place that all we need is development and installation and a learning curve over the next 10-year period, and all of a sudden we're going to have not free energy. I don't like that term because it has so many bad connotations, and there's been so many kind of crackpot developments or pretend developments around the concept of free energy. But it's about as close as free to any type of energy source that you're ever going to see. So just a little bit of update there on the Wing project. It's ongoing. It's going to be continuing for years and decades to come. And I've been getting some of my ducks in a row so I can spend more time concentrating on that particular technology. You have to understand that my schedule during the week consists of a lot of busy tasks that keep me occupied, and so I'm trying to streamline and offload a lot of those so that that provides me with more time to concentrate on my science. But you have to understand that being a small entrepreneur, so to speak, has its benefits, and also you have to be on top of things. You can't just let things go and hope that they somehow manage themselves. And keeping the products, for example, all in order, and keeping the inventory, things like that. Unfortunately, I don't know if this is just with me or if it's with everybody, but every time I seem to depend completely on some person, it falls apart, and I have to go back and pick up the pieces. And so it's just not a it's not always possible to unload all of these daily functions onto other people. I would love to do that, but it just hasn't been very successful. So as I streamline these processes, the things that I do on a daily basis, that is going to give me more time in the very near future to pursue these other interests, which are really the main thing I should be working on, not some of the more menial tasks of daily life in a small enterprise. But at any rate, the other projects are going on in the background. And as far as the space development, like the Google and the SpaceX and the Virgin Galactic and Orbital and the many other enterprises that are out there doing space, I have some unique perspectives on how to manage outer space development due to my years of experience dealing with those fields and also understanding the electrical nature of the universe. I do talk about this. If you want a little bit of review on that, read my book, The Diamond Principle, where I discuss the development of outer space. And this can be done on a very, inexpensive scale, where one needs resources, not necessary financial investment. Many times financial investment is a catch-22 because you have to have a return on that investment to make it practical. Okay, switching gears just again a little bit, I'm going to talk about something I have not talked about really in detail for a long time, and that's the weather. Let's look at the general weather patterns. We had another large-scale cold spell move down into the United States. And where does this leave us? I mean, what's the prognostication for the future? It looks like this winter is going to be another cold one. And it started out that way. Then we had a slight warming trend in October for about a week. And then the other shoe fell and dropped us into basically what I would call probably 10 degrees under average for the temperatures. Oddly enough, this is at a time when the UN Council study on global climate change and warming was released, saying that we are headed into disaster because of global warming. The actual reality is that we are heading into a deep freeze. And so for this time of year, the majority of temperatures in the United States are far below normal, hardly what you'd call global climate change or global warming. Remember that those are used for control measures. Those are just simply the United Nations, which is a branch of the World Bank, controlling the entities such as water or other forms of control of the public. But once again, it looks like we are headed in for a cold winter, but this is symptomatic of the sun itself being at a very low energy state. This trend continues. It's been going on for many years. And I hope that this doesn't continue far into the future, because the cold, as far as crops are concerned, etc. Remember that last spring, it was like mid-June, it was late June almost, when people were still planting in states like Ohio and Indiana, when I visited some of those states and looking at the planting conditions. It looks like there was a recovery, and some of these areas actually did produce some crops, but there were many areas that had failed corn crops due to the late spring wet weather, cold, etc. But predicting the weather is one of the most difficult things to do, and I don't tend to be a meteorologist, but it just looks like we are heading in for what appears to be another very cold winter. So I hope everybody has their wood supply in. Going back to something I talked about a couple weeks ago, along with the wing project, is the ability now to install what are known as heat pumps to derive heat and air conditioning from the ground and from the air in some cases, if it's warm enough, the ability to get heat your house, and then you get a tremendous advantage on the amount of energy used. So at any rate, looking into that as part of the wing project, and that is one of the initial efforts, was to use physical mechanical energy directly from the wing systems to power directly compressors, pumps, etc., which amounts to about fully one-third of the energy expended in this country for manufacturing, for home cooling and heating systems, etc. So with that in mind, I would suggest preparing for a cold winter and buy some extra socks, get the heater going, and just be prepared. The only problem is how to deal with this on the long term in the future. So next year and the year after, who knows what the future will bring. Okay, so in summary, I'm really concerned. I really am personally very concerned, and I don't think there's any way to reverse this. When you have large, deep pocket organizations like Google that are dumping large amounts of money into space or exploration, I think it is very scary, and it's something that the public really should be aware of. There's some I don't see really anything good coming out of this. It's different than if you had organizations that had engineers all working in concert for a better goal and they had ethical standards. But these corporations have already proven that they do not have ethical standards, nor do they view you, the public, as in any type of ethical, in ethical lights. So at any rate, I'm about out of time here. I will be back next week with my Science Hour. And remember the webpage, jmccsci.com, 7 letters. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.